You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Welcome to From the Black Hole, episode 47. On today's episode, we have a very special interview with the one and only Alex Bunbury. First one thing I want to talk about is the CSL and your own personal career development. And I guess there are three stages in that that I think maybe are critical to the story I'm trying to tell. The first one is how you broke into the CSL and what role it played for you at that time. Secondly, you know, where it took you over the course of your playing days in the CSL, and then at the end when you moved over to Europe, what it kind of allowed you to do, and to talk about that for a little while.
Okay. All right, I'll touch on the first part. Obviously, when we qualified for the 1986 World Cup, that was a big deal for Canada.
Obviously.
We obviously thought there'd be many more to come, to follow. I was 16, going on 17. I played in the World Youth Championship in Minsk, Russia, for our under 20 team. That was a World Youth Championship. We qualified for that under Bob Bear Park, who was our coach, the late Bob Bear Park, who had a lot of influence on myself and other players, him and Tony Taylor, the ones that really developed us at the highest level nationally. So I always want to give those two coaches props for how they worked with myself and my fellow teammates to develop us and teach us the ropes. So Bob Bear Park and Tony Taylor were very, very influential from that standpoint. Now, what happened was we qualified, and I came back to Canada, and we didn't perform that well, but I had a fairly good tournament. Bob was telling me, I was considered one of the top players for the first round, right? And I got a phone call from Tony Waiters, who was the national team coach at that time, to come into the final camp with the national team. And I was only 17 years of age. And I was one of the last cuts from that team, and I was an alternate. And Tony Waiters came into my room. I can remember it like it's yesterday, and everyone thought that I'd be on the team. But he came into my room. And he said, "Listen, Alex, you've got many, many more, opportunities to qualify for the World Cup. I'm going to go with veteran players because of my age." And I honestly thought that I was good enough to be on that team. Obviously. That was me personally, and I know that some of some of other players felt that I did well enough to be a part of that team. But as the story goes, it didn't work out. Went back to Montreal, my hometown, where I developed to play the game at a young age. I never played soccer before. I grew up in Montreal playing hockey because I'm an immigrant. I'm from Guyana.
Right.
And came to Montreal when I was 9. So most of the kids in Montreal played hockey. So I was a hockey player.
Right.
My older brothers were big time soccer players in Guyana, and we came to Canada. Obviously, they played soccer as well. So at some point when I was 12 years of age, they encouraged me. I want to say they twisted my arm to start playing soccer. And Simeon Art Barasa, youth soccer development, that's where I learned to play soccer. And there was someone who was highly influential in my development. Because what I came from, we didn't have much. I'm the youngest of 13. I have eight brothers and four sisters. And from a financial standpoint, we didn't have much, but my mom was influential in teaching us about the importance of faith and education and self-respect. So we had a foundation there that my mom and my dad instilled in each and every one of us of working hard and not taking anything for granted and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So when I developed, when I first went to play soccer, and this is going to lead to why I decided to the soccer thing at 18, and now the CSL came in. So bear with me for a little bit. And
okay,
I rarely tell this story to people. I feel like it's important that the fans in Canada get a little understanding of who I am and how I became what I became. And it wasn't just, I believe it's a blessing, but I also know that there were so many people that were influential
mm-hmm.
and inspirational when it came to my development.
Right.
And, so I want to give those people props. I don't think I've had the opportunity to do that too often. And that if I can take this time to make sure that they know, they do, I call them and I speak to them, but the public in general know that my mom and my dad, how important they were in terms of who they are, who they were. My dad has passed away. My mom is still alive at the age of 89 years of age.
Right.
Still lives in Montreal. So I want people to understand that my upbringing from my parents and my siblings were tremendous. My older brothers were very influential in my development as well. They were good players, and they taught me in many ways some of the things that I needed to learn. But the people outside of the family that really helped me out was this gentleman, Mike Tisseo, who was my coach in Montreal. And he was there. He was more of a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
He influenced me in so many positive ways. And that's why when we talk about what things that Kevin is doing in life, it stems from that.
Right.
So I developed to play the game in Montreal. Once again, I never played the game until the age of 12, so I was a late bloomer.
Mm-hmm.
Hockey was my favorite sport, hockey and basketball.
Right.
but at the age of 13, 14 years of age, that's when I became on the U16, I believe, national team. And that's when Tony Taylor, found me and
right.
saw me. Discovered me, one could say, when we played in the regional tournaments.
That's quite a steep learning curve.
Yeah.
To go from not playing to 12 to being on a national rep team by 14.
Within 2 years. So you know that it's a gift from God, and you know that, it doesn't just happen like that. Those people were so influential. So
mm-hmm.
from there, I was on the youth team, the national youth team, forever.
Right.
I was in that system for, and then the Quebec Select and all of that stuff. So those guys, Mike Tisseo, Tesio,
mm-hmm.
so influential for me as my coach and mentor. And once again, Bob Bear Park and Tony Taylor discovering me and putting me in a position where I can grow internationally. And so the thing with the World Cup situation not panning out and coming back to Montreal, working hard, my parents, didn't have much. So the Canadian Soccer League came about, right?
Mm-hmm.
It came about because we made the World Cup, and that was good, and we had the momentum, and I think that gave a lot of investors the impetus to go in and implement this league.
Right.
And it was a big deal for everyone, and I was selected by the Hamilton Steelers at that time, and I think I was only 18 years of age.
Right.
Yes, I was 18. Just turned 18 years of age. And another influential person for that league and for me was Mario Di Bartolomeo, who was the owner of the Hamilton Steelers. And we had a great group of players on that team that were on the national youth team, like Lucio Iranero, and the list goes on and on.
Right,
and on.
Right.
You go back to those days and you see the list of players that played on the national team and the national youth team. There, a lot of them, a good chunk of those players came from the Hamilton Steelers.
Right.
So that league, what it did for myself and others, it really gave us a platform to develop. It gave us a platform to understand what it takes to become a professional. And I know we were the bricklayers, per se. Because,
right.
We started the thing. And it was a nuance, but the players that played in that league and the coaches that coached and the managers and things of that nature, there were flaws. There's flaws in everything that we do, especially when you do it initially.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the foundation for soccer in Canada in many ways. in those days. And I think that the Canadian Soccer League propelled a lot of us to get to a level of playing in Europe or what have you. So that's how influential that was.
Mm-hmm.
And the likes of the Mario Di Bartolomeo, who should get a lot of credit for, he was a mainstay as an owner. He wasn't always easy to deal with, but man, I always regard him in the highest. And we've talked, him and I still keep in touch. This man did a lot of good things for Canadian soccer,
and he
should be recognized for that. And I know he was. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame, which is very, 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 yeah, it's something that he well deserved, I should say.
Right.
So the Canadian Soccer League in its totality was, in my humble opinion, a driving force for my development as an international player, as well as a player that can go off to Europe and develop as well.
Right.
So hopefully that answers question number one.
Yeah, it does. Absolutely. And well as well. Answers it well as well.
Okay.
Now, can you give any specifics about some other players that you played with that also, you know, used the CSL as a springboard? Like, are there any specific examples which jump to mind of guys that you said?
Paul Pesce-Salido.
Right.
Paul Pesce-Salido, Lyndon Hooper.
Yes.
Who I think is a very underrated player.
Mm-hmm.
Lyndon went to play in England.
Yeah.
For Birmingham. I don't think people realize that. I didn't play with Lyndon on my team. I played with him on the national team. But Lyndon played for Toronto. Paul Pesce-Salido played for Toronto. Those are two names that really sticks out. Because you have to understand, back in the day, you didn't have too many Canadian players go to Europe and perform.
Right.
My real good friend, Randy Samuel, after the World Cup, was the first player that I looked up to in many ways that went to Holland and played after the World Cup.
Right.
And Randy should get a lot of credit for that. And I still think that people tend to forget those names.
Yeah.
He's a pioneer in my eyes because he went to Europe on a big club, PSV. And I mean, you don't see that. We didn't see that in those days.
Right, right.
And then we had other players playing in Europe, but he went to a big club in Europe. We had two or three players playing in Europe and Sweden and things like that, and it's not recognizable. But when you go to Holland after the World Cup, that was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I recollect, I went to West Ham United, which is a big club.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and I was playing at the highest level. I was very fortunate. It was Division One in those days.
Right.
It wasn't the Premier League.
Yeah.
And things didn't work out. And the reason why things didn't work out at West Ham United was because I had to fly back and forth to play World Cup qualifying
for
the national team. And Billy Bonds and Harry Redknapp at the time, they said choose between country, club and country. And
right.
I made the decision to choose my country because at that time it was really just myself and Randy that were playing at the highest level in Europe.
Right.
And I felt that I couldn't turn my back on my country because my country gave me so much.
Mm-hmm.
And it got me in the doghouse and I had to leave, but it was a blessing in disguise. That's how I ended up. I ended up in Maritimo because Edinho, who played for Toronto Blizzards the year that I played for the Toronto Blizzards in the Canadian Soccer League, ended up becoming the coach of Maritimo.
Right.
What a small world.
Yeah, right? No doubt.
And we were a mutual friend. He found out that I was having problems at West Ham United, and he sent out an invitation for me to come and see if I would like to play in Portugal. And I said, no chance.
Right.
I'm like, I don't want to leave England and come and play. I'll wait it out. I'll get my chance. And my chance wasn't coming. I was playing
right
on the reserve, scoring goals. They still didn't want to take me because they didn't think that I was totally committed to the club.
Right,
I
right.
signed a five-year deal with West Ham. 5 years. And I'm there for a year and a half, and I'm not playing.
Right.
So we finally, with my agent, decided to take up the offer because I wasn't getting any offers in England because I wasn't playing.
Right.
No one was seeing me. We did have one or two inquiries, but nothing serious. So I needed to, you know, I'm 24 years of age. I'm married. I've got two kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, is this the end? I believed in my ability, and you know, a lot of people doubted it when I went to Europe and didn't think that it would happen. But you know, with hard work and dedication and having a lot of people beside me, it worked out. So we went. I flew into Madeira, and as I was landing in Funchal, it was the most beautiful place I've ever seen.
Right.
It's tropical. It's unbelievable. The weather in comparison to going to
from West Ham. Yeah.
The rain. Oh my God. That's when I said, you know what? I don't care. I want to be here no matter what. And then I ended up signing a year and a half contract with them. Long story short, Coutinho got fired that same year that I was there.
Right.
Then Paulo Autori came in as the coach, and he's Brazilian. And that was it. It just, my career just took off because that experience that I had in the Canadian Soccer League really helped me out in terms of preparing me to being a professional or being in a professional environment. And I cannot think of a better apprenticeship than that, per se.
Right.
The Canadian Soccer League was not at the caliber of playing in the English League, but what it did, it made a young player like myself and others, it gave us that opportunity to develop and to see what it's like to come to training every single day. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Not three or four times a day. Every single day, conditioning, preparation, during, before, and after.
Yes.
Dealing with ups and downs, dealing with the media, dealing with fans, dealing with a small market. There's so many things that really, when you reflect as you get older, you really appreciate the amount of effect that had in developing you both technically and mentally as well.
Yeah, there are a lot of moving parts, hey? And I imagine for a 16 or 17 year old to get thrown into that without any pre-preparation would be quite a difficult task.
No doubt. So anyone that tries to push aside the CSL, and I cannot think of any rational person that played in that league, that were a fan of that league, or had any association with that league, can ever badmouth what that league meant to the development of players, Canadian players, Canadian players, even with its flaws.
Right.
It was absolutely essential for our development. And I can't think of any player that will say, me going to Europe is what did it.
Right.
No. What gave us the base was the Canadian Soccer League. The guys like Mario Di Bartolomeo pumping in money into a league that wasn't really, you know.
Right, yeah.
Well,
it's a major financial risk for them.
We didn't make much money either, okay? It wasn't like we made tons of money doing it. But we were in an environment that was as close as it can get to being a professional environment that you can find. And the league did improve. It did get better. We were bringing in Brazilians like Edinho and players from Argentina and from England that started to come in the U.S. started to come into the league. So it brought the level of play up to another level and gave us recognition to some degree because players started to fluctuate to Canada to participate in the league. So there was a lot of moving parts, as you well stated, but that league was, once again, without sounding repetitive, that league was so essential. I know for myself, and I know for other players. And I mentioned a couple of players that I thought, you know, Paul Pesce-Salido.
Right.
And, Carlo Corazine. I mean, the list goes on.
Uh-huh.
I ended up going to Europe and played and participated in the Canadian Soccer League.
Right.
As well.
You know, I've got a quick follow-up on something that you said there because, this is a story I guess I've heard. And it wasn't just back in the 80s and 90s. It seems to be throughout. And that is that there is a lot of resistance for coaches in Europe, for Canadian players that are playing in Europe, to travel back to play with the Canadian national team. And so you get this kind of song and dance routine where they're not sure if they can show up. And it, I guess it, for me, it makes me appreciate the ones that are there every game all the more. But in comparison to the Canadian Soccer League, was it, were the stories similar or were they the opposite? Were there, I mean, like a guy like Dominic Mobilio played pretty much his whole career in the Canadian Soccer League and also was out for Canada games all the time. Was it easier for him because it was a Canadian league and he was going to play for the Canadian team being released for international play?
Oh, for sure. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. It was easier for the players who were playing domestically. And it should have been easier and it must have been easier. But for myself, I mean, once again, mind you, when I was playing in Europe, when I was playing in Portugal, or when it started initially with West Ham United, and then when I went to Portugal, we're still qualifying for World Cup qualification.
Right.
My club president came up to me in Marítimo, and he said, we do not want you to leave and go play for Canada.
Right.
Because they didn't think much of Canadian soccer, first and foremost.
Right.
And they're paying you the big bucks.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that those two things really put you put you in a corner.
Mm-hmm.
The back was up against the wall. I was very fortunate that I happened to be one of the top players in the Portuguese league.
Right.
At that time. I mean, I won Foreign Player of the Year. I became Marítimo's all-time leading scorer, and still to this day. So I had a lot of clout to put a clause in my contract. And I don't think a lot of Canadian fans know this. Why I was always there for every qualification
mm-hmm.
in those days was because I had a clause in my contract that any time my country needed me for games, there was no conflict. I must go and represent my country.
Right.
That was in my contract. I put that clause in my contract. Now, unfortunately, players like Craig Forrest and some of the other players, I don't know whether or not they had that clause or whether or not the club in England, and maybe even if I had stayed in West Ham, I would probably not be able to do that. I don't know.
Right.
But I was fortunate enough, and just speaking for myself, I had the clout to put that in my contract. And that was what enabled me to be able to come out and represent my country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a big deal. I mean, it's funny. It's so many of the things that you've touched on. You mentioned people not remembering a guy like Randy Samuel, but it's interesting because I've been having discussions about this with a variety of people over several days, and people have long memories. There are a few people. It's a very small group of people, and it's kind of spread out coast to coast in Canada. Who have this chronicle of what's happened in Canadian soccer, because I think it's a small community and it people manage to keep tabs on that. And there was basically a discussion or a semi argument started about who's the best center back that Canada has ever produced. And, you know, Randy Samuel was in there, and then it was okay, but where were they by 20 or 21? Cause the conversations around Daniil Henry right now, right? He's going over to Cyprus. Is he, at his age, the best that Canada's produced? And then there was this list all of a sudden produced, and there are all these names on it. And we know all these names because some of us, not very many, but some have really paid close attention to that. So it's they're not gone and forgotten, that's for sure.
I think that Harden fans do remember, but we live in an age now where it's what have you done for me lately?
Yeah, for sure.
Right? In many ways, in social media, it's all about the kids that are the players that are playing. What I remember is, you know, the Bob Lanegusis of the world and the Bruce Wilsons of the world, those guys, I looked up to those guys when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked up to Randy, even though he's only three, four years older than I am, Randy Samuel. And those guys are they were a big influence and did a lot for the game.
Right.
And I really believe that someone like Randy Samuel, in my estimate, is one of the greatest Canadian soccer players that ever been produced.
Right.
Because to go to the World Cup and to perform as he did and to go to a big club like he did and play in Holland for as long as he did, a lot of people tend to forget that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the Bruce Wilsons of the world. We have the Mike Sweeneys of the world. Yes. Obviously, people know about Bobby Lanuzzi, and the list goes on and on. I mean, I'm missing out on some players here. I know that. I'm not going to be able to mention all of their names. But we tend to forget the Lyndon Hoopers of the world.
Mm-hmm.
That as a midfielder, I played with Lyndon, so I know
right.
the hard work that he's done and what he meant to our team, youth teams and our national senior team.
Right.
So I want the Canadian public to understand that there are some players that paved the way. And, you know, the small knit that you've talked about, they will recognize that and
mm-hmm.
know that. But the broader spectrum of fans who are ardent Canadian fans, which is awesome and growing,
right.
they need to understand the history of what the guys before really brought to the front. And this is not with much fanfare.
Right.
It's not much economic gains. These guys didn't make a lot of money doing that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was for the love and passion of wearing the Canadian jersey. And when I became the player I became at a certain point in my peak of my career, because of that, because of the Canadian Soccer League, because of players like Bruce Wilson and Bobby Lanuzzi, and the list goes on, Mike Sweeney, who I have the utmost respect for, because of those players, David Norman, I was able to always want to give back to my country
mm-hmm.
because I saw what those guys, what the country meant to those guys playing for Canada. They didn't do it for money. They didn't do it for fame.
Right.
They did it because they love representing their country. And I saw that. And you can feel it when I was around them. This was for their country. They weren't making any money doing this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw that. And then and then the icing on the cake was what my country, Canada, which I still consider my country, did for me and my family.
Right.
My parents. They afforded us the opportunity to live a better life. They welcomed us with open arms into their country.
Right.
And I'm Canadian. And I'm proud to be a Canadian. And I wanted my son to represent Canada. you won't believe it. But my son is not Canadian. He was born in Canada. And people have to understand that, right?
Yeah.
But he left to go to Europe when he was 1 year, one.
Right.
And, you know, so he grew up in Europe, and he grew up here in the United States.
Right.
And I have such a big influence on him. So when I was trying to push him to play for Canada, I was doing him an injustice because that was not where his heart was.
Right, right.
He was doing it for his dad. And a lot of people don't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think people understand what playing for Canada meant for me.
Right, right.
Right? So they figured automatically that Alex Bunbury's son now, I don't like speaking in the third person. My son now will have the same sentiment. But how can you have the same sentiment if all you have in Canada is your grandmother and two uncles? Okay?
Right.
And that's it. That's the extension. And lots of cousins, but it's here. So I know I've thrown a curveball there, but I just wanted people to understand that's how much Canada meant for me,
mm-hmm.
the Canadian national team, that I wanted my son to play for Canada.
Right.
Well.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. And I mean, of course, I wouldn't be much of a soccer supporter if I wasn't, you know, aware. It's actually a bit of a... not sure what the word is, a bit of an affliction that a lot of us have followed for a long time, that there's the whole, you know, the group of players that have gone on to play for other countries.
Right?
And you get a bit of an affliction about it, right? Anybody that right. goes then suddenly is persona non grata, so to speak. So it was interesting that you brought it up.
I totally understand. I told my son, I said, comes with the territory. You go on national, you go on a television, you do an interview, and you say that you want to play for this country, and this is where your heart is,
mm-hmm.
playing for Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, within the next 2 months, you're playing for the U.S.
Right.
There's a price to be paid for that. And he knows this.
Yeah.
But it wasn't done in the way that some people portrayed it as.
Right.
It was done in a way that my son was wanting to live up to the expectation of his dad that he looks up so much to.
Right.
and he didn't want to disappoint me. And we had that one-on-one talk. And I said, you do what's right for you.
Right.
And I'll always be there for you and support you.
Yeah.
It's what's best for you, not what's best for Dad. And he looked me in the eye, and he said, Dad, I really want to play for the U.S. This is where I developed playing in Portugal and here.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I just got a call from Bob Bradley, and I really want to do this, Dad. And I said, son, I'm going to support you. But you know you're going to get a lot of backlash not because of who you are. They see the potential in you because you're my son.
Mm-hmm.
That will add a lot of fuel to the fire.
Yeah.
And just be prepared for it and conduct yourself as you always have. Be apologetic and move forward.
Yeah.
So there's...
I know, that's fascinating.
We had to go through that for a while, you know, and that was hard on it.
Yeah, I imagine.
Because, you know, the negativity that came this way wasn't easy. And it wasn't easy for me. You know, that's my son.
Right.
And I know he's a good kid. He was just caught in the middle of something that he didn't quite understand. The magnitude of what it's like to be playing for Canada, and now the public is seeing that there's a potential of having another young, could be special player. Nobody can predict the future.
Right.
And he happens to be Alex Bunbury's kid. So now that even puts more intrigue into it. There's the legacy there.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, so it was a little bit more different than any other case, I would think, even though some other cases might be more egregious. But
right.
Yeah. You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely. So, no, I do. It's fascinating. It's fascinating,
time,
too.
I took this time to really talk.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talk. I have not gone out. Do you know how many inquiries I get for interviews?
I imagine you get a fair number.
I want to know what's going on, and I just don't do it. So I said to myself, when I saw that email come from you, I said, okay, maybe this is an opportunity, if this goes across Canada, to do a third. I did an interview when they did the 50th thing. I went on and I talked about Canadian soccer and
right.
Canadian Soccer Association. You probably saw that interview
mm-hmm.
I did with Tony. Right? But I've never really sat down and had a conversation. So I told them, this is Friday. I'm going to take an hour or so away from my time and just sit down with someone
yeah.
that I don't know.
Yeah, that's right.
But kind of open up in some ways, and hopefully this gets out to the public so they understand. A lot of people are asking, where's Alex Bundy? What is he doing?
Mm-hmm.
What has become of me? I know that.
Yeah.
I hear it a lot. My relatives in Canada, soccer people in Canada, and I want them to know. And this interview could really let some people know what's going on.
Right.
Sorry about going on.
It's very, it's fascinating stuff. And I'd be the last person that should criticize anybody about being long-winded because, I get it all the time. I'm one of the most long-winded people on the planet, and I don't apologize too much for it though, because I could, but there's not much I can do about it anyway. You know, I want to go back for a second, to something you said about, I mean, you said part of the reason you came to, or you were playing, you had the contract, had the clause in your contract when you played in Portugal, so that you could come back and play for Canada, is part of the reason was the love and the passion of wearing the Canadian jersey. So I yes. just want to turn for maybe the last part of this to the qualifying campaign to try and qualify for the 1994 World Cup. And a very quick personal anecdote. I watched a lot of those games live. I wasn't nearly as up on what was going on in soccer 20 some years ago as I am now. I'm much more plugged in now.
Right.
It's easier now with technological advances and those kinds of things
yes.
too. But I went back and I've watched a lot of the clips of those games and some of them, end to end. And I have to say, you can feel that passion coming from the play on the field when you watch the games. They're exciting games to watch.
Oh, yeah.
I just, could you talk a little bit about that qualifying campaign
what it was like being in it and where you guys saw yourselves going with that kind of collective effort?
Okay. To be quite honest, we honestly believe that that team will qualify for the World Cup. We had everything that you would want to qualify for the 94 World Cup. We had Bobby Leonarduzzi as our coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Bobby had the experience of playing in the previous World Cup, in the 86 World Cup. Bobby was very personable, you know. He had charisma. He was good in front of the cameras. He had a way of speaking to the players. He was a player coach, right?
Right.
He had a way of influencing the players in a positive way. He knew how to put his arm around your shoulder. So he understood the characteristics of each individual so he can get the best out of them. And it was amazing how he used that. And then we had Alan Arrington, who was the assistant coach. Alan was so good to deal with, because Alan was really a part of, like, he was like one of the guys as well.
Right.
But there was a line that was drawn too, you know, and I think all of the players, we had a great mixture of experience. We had players who were playing at a high level in Europe. We had the players in the Canadian soccer. So we had a big mixture, but the majority of those players were playing in the Canadian Soccer League.
Right. They were.
Right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely they were.
The majority of those players were playing in the Canadian Soccer League. So if that does not say what having your own domestic league means to developing young players, you know, nothing else will say it.
Right.
It is so essential. So that team, in my opinion, was probably, to date, the best talent of pool players that Canada has produced today. And that's coming from a guy who played with some fantastic players in Portugal, some fantastic players in England. You understand?
Yeah.
And you know, the 98 qualification, we had players who were playing, even more players that were playing in Europe. But in terms of talent, experience, all the pieces that you need, coaching, support. We had a great following. Wherever we played, we had great fans. You understand the fan
base
was great.
We had
We had great media coverage. So everything was aligned for us to do what we need to do. And underneath all of that was the Canadian Soccer League.
Right.
That was the platform.
You could certainly see the enthusiasm going back and watching, like, the first leg of the Australia game in Edmonton.
Yes.
Right? It was an event. Right? It kind of makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck watching it and realizing, holy smokes, it was a real thing.
All of these boys wanted it. And it was probably the biggest disappointment, because we had it at varsity. We had it. Varsity Stadium, we're up 1-0 against Mexico.
Right.
We were up 1-0, and we had it, and we let it slip away. And then obviously we had to go through the route.
Right.
With Australia, and things happen, and these things can happen. But as you go back full circle on it, and you analyze it, you have to always go back to the Canadian Soccer League.
Mm-hmm.
And how influential, and how, without that league, we don't have the opportunity to get that close to qualifying.
Right.
And since then, we have not come that close.
Yeah. Well, that's certainly the truth.
And that is very telling. So we do have the MLS. We have MLS now. We have three teams in Canada,
mm-hmm.
and that's huge, and that's very important. But do I think having a Canadian domestic league would be even more beneficial for younger players, for fan base? I think, personally, I think it would be phenomenal. That's what I think.
Yeah.
But then again, it has to be done in the right way. Everybody has to come together. Everybody has to understand this is not about my club or my league. This is about soccer in Canada. This is about those young kids that love the game and has a passion for the game that are not going to quit when they're 16, 17 years of age and go play hockey.
Right.
Okay? And that's what happens. I know this because there's no light at the end of the tunnel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where do you go?
We have to give them that light. We have to give them that light. And when they're talented and they know they're like I was when I was younger, and then the Canadian League came just at the perfect time, and other young players before me or after me saw that Canadian soccer league because it was in existence for quite a few years, I think it could be beneficial. And I hope that the people that are thinking about this are people that have a passion and understanding of what it can do. And you doing something like this can educate people on many fronts of how essential it was for us to have a Canadian league, a domestic league that was our own,
mm-hmm.
that had our identity, a Canadian identity. We played Canadian-style soccer, if there's such a thing. Right, we didn't have much flair.
Right,
right. It wasn't Spain. It was a mixture of the British style and things of that nature. Right,
right.
But we had some players that can do some special things. We had it was a workman kind of attitude, and I think it really identified what Canada was all about. And free going, and everybody got along, and everybody was pushing each other, you know, willing to make sacrifices for each other.
Right.
That's Canada. And we weren't intimidated by anyone. We weren't intimidated by the U.S., Mexico, anyone. Yes, we lost big to Mexico in Mexico, the altitude, but let them come and play us in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And it's the same thing with the U.S. We weren't afraid of any of those teams. We knew that we can match up to any of them. We believed in what Bobby was telling us, the style that he wanted us to play. You know, we played to our strengths. And I thought we did it as well as you can with the talent that we had. You know, I'm very grateful for my career. I'm truly blessed to be able to play 15 years professionally. If anyone had told me that, and to go in Europe and accomplish the things that I accomplished because of great coaching and teammates and the likes and great fan support and family, friends, I'm blessed. And those 15 years, to me, the Canadian Soccer League was the prelude for it all happening.
And that brings us to the end of episode 47. Thanks for listening, and a tremendous thanks to Alex Bunbury for sharing his time with us. We'll be back soon with another episode, so until then, take care.